There's a moment in aviation history when something genuinely new shows up. Not an incremental improvement, not a refinement of what came before. Something that makes you stop and say, "I'm not sure what to call that." That happened recently over the waters off Rhode Island. I'm Tower, you're listening to ATIS on Radio Hangar, and today we're talking about a vehicle that isn't quite a plane, isn't quite a boat, and isn't quite an aircraft in any traditional regulatory sense. But it might be all three. Regent, the company behind what they're calling the Viceroy Seaglider, just completed the first crewed flight of their full-scale prototype. And if you've been following the electric aviation space, this name has come up before. But now, it just got very real. Before we go further, a word from the folks supporting today's show. Today's aviation news is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. All right, let's talk Seagliders. First, some history. Because you cannot understand where Regent is going without knowing where this technology came from. Wing and ground effect vehicles have been kicking around since the 1960s. The Soviet Union built the most dramatic examples of the era. Western intelligence analysts called their most famous design the Caspian Sea Monster. The Soviets called it the Korabl Makit, meaning ship prototype. It was enormous. It flew at remarkable speed, just a few feet above the water. When the Central Intelligence Agency spotted it in satellite imagery, analysts genuinely weren't sure what category of vehicle they were looking at. Ground effect is a phenomenon every student pilot learns about, usually in the context of landing. When a wing operates within roughly one wingspan's height of a surface, aerodynamic efficiency improves dramatically, induced drag drops. Lift increases, the wing doesn't need to work as hard. That's why your Cessna 172 floats a little longer in the flare than the numbers strictly suggest it should. You're in ground effect. The runway is helping you fly. The Soviet Ekranoplans used this principle at scale. Massive craft operating at very low altitude over water, using far less energy than a comparable aircraft flying at cruise altitude. The physics are real and they're significant. But those early designs had serious limitations. The Loon-class Ekranoplan, the missile-carrying variant the Soviets eventually built, could barely handle waves above 3 feet significant wave height. That's not a vessel you can schedule around. That's a liability. Structural challenges piled up, operational constraints multiplied, and eventually the whole category went quiet. For decades, wing and ground effect technology sat in the category of interesting but impractical. Regent thinks they've solved the problem, and they just showed us they're serious. Here's what makes the Viceroy different from those Cold War designs. Regent approaches the Seaglider as a maritime vessel, not an aircraft. That is not just a semantic distinction. It is a regulatory strategy with real implications for timeline and commercial viability. The Viceroy is designed to operate in three distinct modes. It departs from a dock like a conventional boat. It then transitions to a hydrofoil configuration, lifting the hull clear of the water surface using submerged foils as speed increases. And then using the speed gained in foil-borne mode, it transitions into the ground effect zone where it flies. At cruise, the Viceroy operates between 10 and 15 feet above the water surface, fast enough to matter, high enough to clear most sea state, low enough to stay in the efficiency band where the ground effect physics work in its favor. According to Flying Magazine, the full-scale prototype completed its first crewed flight, which Regent describes as the final phase of prototype trials before commercial certification work begins in earnest. They've been testing unmanned scale models for a while. Those tests attracted significant investment and brought in actual customers, maritime transport operators who have signed letters of intent for full-scale vehicles. The move to crewed flight is where the lab either holds up or it doesn't. It held up. Now, here's where the regulatory picture gets interesting. Pay attention to this part because it genuinely changes the calculus. Regent is pursuing certification through the United States Coast Guard, not the Federal Aviation Administration or FAA, because the Viceroy is classified as a maritime vessel. Think about what that means. The FAA's aircraft certification process for novel configurations has proven to be extraordinarily time-consuming. Companies building electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft, the category often called eVTOL, have been working through FAA-type certification for years. The goalposts move, the standards evolve, the timelines slip. Regent is routing around that process by staying close to the water and staying under the jurisdiction of an agency with a different certification framework. Is that a loophole, maybe? But it's a legal one. And if it works, it could get commercial sea gliders into service faster than any eVTOL program operating under traditional aircraft certification. The catch is that the Coast Guard certification standards for novel high-speed maritime vessels are themselves somewhat new territory. The Viceroy will have to demonstrate sea state handling, collision avoidance, emergency egress procedures, all the things any passenger vessel has to prove. But the framework exists, the timeline appears more tractable, and Regent has chosen that path deliberately. The commercial case is compelling. Regent is targeting coastal routes. Think inter-island service in Hawaii. Routes between coastal New England cities, Pacific Northwest destinations, separated by water but close enough in distance that a sea glider makes far more sense than a commercial flight, with all the overhead that entails. No check-in counter, no security line, no concourse. The range on the Viceroy is designed around roughly 180 miles, at cruise speeds approaching 180 miles per hour. Capacity is 12 passengers. That puts it squarely in competition with the small turboprop operations that serve island hoppers and coastal communities today. But without requiring an airport at either end, a dock and you're gone. For underserved coastal communities, that is a meaningful proposition. Small regional airports have been losing service for years. The economics of turboprop regional aviation at low passenger counts are brutal. If a sea glider can connect those same communities at competitive price points, the market opens up in ways that traditional aviation economics simply do not allow. Now, let's be honest about the limitations, because this technology is not a solved problem. Sea state remains the primary operational constraint. Regent's designed sea state limit is around 5 feet significant wave height. That is meaningfully better than those old Soviet designs. It is not unlimited. There will be days when the vehicle is docked because the ocean will not cooperate. Operators will need robust weather awareness and cancellation policies that account for maritime conditions on top of atmospheric ones. Dispatchers will need to watch buoy data the same way we watch METARs. Battery energy density is the other variable. The Viceroy runs on electric power. At 180 miles of range, the battery pack has to be substantial. Every pound of battery is a pound of payload, and unlike a turboprop that can be refueled in minutes, an electric vehicle charging cycle has to be planned into the turn schedule. Regent has said they're watching battery chemistry improvements closely. The next generation of cell technology could meaningfully extend range and reduce charging windows. But they're not waiting for it. The Viceroy is designed to be viable with today's batteries. The other open question is crew qualifications. Who operates a sea glider? Does it require a pilot's certificate? A captain's license? Both. Regent hasn't fully disclosed their crewing model, but given the maritime vessel classification, the most logical pathway involves a Coast Guard credentialed captain with specific type training for the sea glider's operational envelope. That is a different credential than what most of us in this community carry. If you've been thinking about transitioning into the electric mobility space as it matures, this is worth watching. The people who will staff these vehicles need to understand aerodynamics, hydrodynamics, weather, and passenger operations. That skill set sounds a lot like what pilots already have. Let me pull back and look at the bigger picture. The Viceroy doesn't operate in the airspace in any traditional sense. It doesn't interact with air traffic control during cruise. It doesn't file a flight plan with the FAA. It doesn't need an instrument approach to get to its destination. But it competes eventually for the same short-haul passengers that regional operators and general aviation charter services are carrying today. And some of those routes connect communities that also have general aviation airports. This is not a threat to general aviation. Not directly, but it is a useful reminder that the transportation landscape is expanding, and the vehicles populating that landscape don't all look like what we grew up flying. What matters for this community is that sea gliders need operators, maintenance professionals, dispatchers, and people who understand the intersection of weather and vehicle performance. The talent pool for that work comes from aviation. One more point on this story before we move on. Regent reaching first crewed flight matters not just for them, but for the entire field of wing and ground effect technology. Several other companies are working in this space. None of them have crewed flight. Regent does now. That is a real milestone. It is not proof of commercial success. There is a long stretch between a successful prototype flight and fare-paying passengers stepping aboard at a coastal dock. But it is proof that the physics work, that the airframe holds across all three operating modes, and that the transition sequences are controllable. We will keep watching this one. A few other items before we close. The National Transportation Safety Board, or NTSB, continues to publish preliminary accident reports showing loss of control events as the dominant fatal accident category in general aviation. This has been true for over a decade. The NTSB has issued recommendations. The FAA has updated the airman certification standards. Curriculum has changed, and the numbers persist. If you're not flying regularly, your aeronautical skill set degrades faster than most pilots want to admit. Book the flight review. Do it with an instructor who will actually challenge you, not just tick the box. Loss of control is preventable. The data says we are not preventing it at the rate we should be. Also worth noting for anyone operating near the Northeast Corridor this fall, helicopter medical transport activity along coastal routes has increased. Those aircraft are often operating under instrument flight rules, on short notice departures. They are not always talking to approach before they're in your airspace. Know your frequencies, listen before you enter congested areas. And when something doesn't look right on traffic, ask. Sources today include Flying Magazine and Regions published program updates, the NTSB Preliminary Report Database, and FAA Advisory Materials. You can find us at radiohanger.com. Tower out.